Welcome. You are listening to the Better Together podcast with Callie and Rosario Picardo. We take on topics involving marriage, ministry, parenting, communication, relationships, and other subjects that our listeners want to hear more about.
Welcome to another edition of the Better Together podcast. I'm your co-host, Rosario Picardo.
And I'm your other co-host, Callie Picardo. And today we have with us Pastor Jim Harnish. Jim has served for 42 years in pastoral ministry in Florida. I'm a little jealous of the location,
yes.
Jim. He's a retired United Methodist preacher, and he is an author as well. He's authored a number of books, and we're excited to talk to him about his newest book called Finding Your Bearings, How Words That Guided Jesus Through Crisis Can Guide Us. Jim, thanks for joining us. Welcome to the Better Together podcast.
Thank you. It's a joy to be with you.
So, Jim, start us off. Where did this book come from? Why did you decide to write it?
Well, that's an interesting story. I guess they all are, but this one came actually several things moved together. One, I was with my editor at the United Methodist Publishing House a couple of years ago, and I said, tell me what... what do people need? What are folks looking for? And she said, right now, folks need help with the Old Testament. There's really a lack there, and that's an area of need. And I said, well, I like the Old Testament. And I even read it. And and she said, well, have you ever considered the places where Jesus directly quotes the Old Testament, not the place where the Old Testament is quoted about him or other references, but where Jesus actually drew words out of the Old Testament. And I said, that's interesting. I had never thought about that. So I went to work studying all the places in the Gospels where Jesus is recorded as directly quoting from the Old Testament. And one of the things I discovered was that a number of those places are at critical turning points in the gospel, either crisis moments in his life or decisive moments with the disciples. They're often at those crisis moments. Now, I was digging into that and getting my heart and mind around it. And then 2020 came along. And we were confronted with the converging crises of the COVID pandemic, the racial reckoning that was going on in the country and continues to go on in the country, the economic decline that was a part of that. I mean, it was a tough time. And those two pieces started coming together. And I thought, what would it be like for us to look at the way Jesus drew on what he had learned from the Old Testament to sustain him and guide him through crisis, and how that might guide us. It also opened up the whole thing of, where did Jesus get this stuff? I mean, it wasn't just poured into his brain by some magical osmosis. He had to learn it from his parents. Mm-hmm. He learned it in synagogue. He was so nurtured in it. It was so much a part of his life that when these decisive moments came, the most natural thing for him was simply to draw on the words that had been handed down to him and the whole history of the faith. And so that got to looking at, well, what's the background here? When Jesus quotes, what are the passages that he's quoting? Where did they come from? What was the context? So all of that sort of flowed together into finding a way to hopefully be helpful to other folks in living their life as a follower of Christ and drawing on the same resources that Jesus did when they are in times of decision, conflict, crisis, temptation, and hope with a word of hope. So that's how we ended up there.
Sounds like an incredible task you took on to, you know, dig deep in your research and study. Was there anything surprising to you or an aha moment you had as you were working on this?
Oh, wow. Yeah, many of them. Because, you know, the deeper you dig, the more surprises you find. So I think the surprises often were, wow, how the context in which the words were put together in the Old Testament connected to the context in which Jesus was dealing with these things and the way we do, like the temptations, that that one, that these are not sort of the petty temptations that you're going to give up eating candy for Lent or something, that the real temptation there was, how is Jesus going to be who he knows himself to be? Because they come right on the heels of the baptism. So Jesus has received this bold declaration, you are my son. And now what's it going to be like? And the fascinating thing was, Satan never questions who Jesus is. He never questions the identity of Jesus. He questions how Jesus will live out that calling. And it, you know, seemed to occur to me that those are the deep places where we are. And also, the word temptation can also mean testing. So those are the places where we are tested. It's not usually about my identity. It's about how I'm going to live. It's about the behavior that I'll follow. So that was one. That really opened up some new levels for me.
I think it was maybe a C.S. Lewis quote that you had in that area about temptation that really just jumped out at me, about how temptation, when we're just going along with it, it doesn't feel hard because we're not actually trying to resist it. But yeah, to actually, when you start to fight against those temptations, is where it really becomes that challenging crisis. And so in some ways, Jesus is the only one who's ever fully known what it's like to be fully tempted, because he's the only one who's ever perfectly resisted. But that pressure that we feel as we try to resist does not mean we're bad people. It just means we're actually trying to walk against that temptation. That was kind of a light bulb moment for me.
Which, after all, that's exactly what Screwtape Letters is all about. And I think that reference comes from that. At one place in Screwtape, he says the most effective way to hell is the easiest way. Mm-hmm. That's not in the book. But I think I also drew on E. Stanley Jones, who says something about that it's when we're tested that we find out who we really are, what we're really made of. Mm-hmm. If I were really good, I'd have my finger on that spot here, but
you're good. You've written it. It's out there for others to be able to read. But I love that. And Jesus, during those times of temptation, during those times of crisis, he really did. He went back to the Old Testament for his grounding there. So I love that. Jim, you also talk about how we can find our bearings by recognizing our true north. Talk to us a little bit about that. I mean, how do we, if we feel like, oh my goodness, it just keeps hitting us, like one crisis after the other, how do we even begin to get our bearings? I mean, how do we find our true north? How did Jesus do it?
Yeah. Absolutely, because we all can get pushed off course so easily, and that there, what is that center, unchanging core, the true north to which we are drawn. And Jesus makes it very clear, I think, in the story of the young man who came to him and said, "Hey, how do I find this life?" And Jesus said, "Do you know the commandments?" "Oh yeah, I've kept all those." And then he really works it down to the two that are both in the Old Testament: love God and love your neighbor. And says, "That's it. That's the true north, the compass toward which your calling, your life as a disciple is going to be set." And, you know, there's nothing new about that. Everybody's heard that. But it's the word we need to hear over and over again, that it's really about loving God and loving others, and that becomes the line that we follow. I did learn that there's a difference between true north and magnetic north, but that's a bit of science that Jesus didn't have to worry about.
Jim, I know often when you're writing a book, you start kind of living it as well. How has this work impacted your own life and faith?
Very much, particularly because I was working on it during all of that critical, difficult stuff that hit us in 2020. I mean, we're still not over it. So I found myself not just writing about these things, but living into them myself. And there is some autobiographical stuff in the book, not like I love Frederick Buechner, but there's not as much of me in this book as Frederick Buechner would tell. But I think one that I point to is that I had some really helpful readers, who were reading chapters along with me and really asking probing questions. When I come to Golgotha, I drew a lot on James Cone's book, The Cross and the Lynching Tree, which that book had opened up a lot to me about the way the impact of racism in our culture continues to just be the cross where we have to face. And Cohn said that that until we face that, till we see the connection of the cross and the lynching tree, we'll never really be able to live the Christian life in America. And one of the readers was a very bright, young African-American businessman who said, "I've always seen it that way." Mm-hmm. That was nothing new for him. It was a new discovery for me, but he knew that. And then there was an African-American pastor, a woman colleague, who read it and said, "Jim, are you allowing this to impact you?" Mm-hmm. And to listen for the ways in which your inherited priority as a white male, where are the places in your life and your ministry that that's gotten in the way of being faith? I mean, she was really willing to push me on some hard things. And so, yeah, there were those places. And then again, in the chapter on Golgotha, I tell a story about a loss of a very good friend at 39 years old with cancer, mm-hmm. that had a profound impact, not only on me personally, but on the whole rest of my ministry. And that story is in there in connection to the places where Jesus quotes the Old Testament from the cross. And my God, why? And ultimately, into your hands I commit my spirit. And so, yeah, that it took me to some deep places. And then fortunately, we end up on the Emmaus Road, which is good news. We never hear Jesus quote the Old Testament again after the crucifixion. Mm-hmm. The closest you get is on the road to Emmaus, when Luke records that he told them the whole story. He opened the prophets. I mean, it's only a 2-mile walk. They must have been walking pretty slow. But Jesus laid out the whole story with them on the way. And I tell in there that I asked Richard Heisenreiter, the professor at Duke Divinity School. I asked Richard Hayes, New Testament scholar at Duke, why is it that we never hear Jesus quote the Old Testament in the Easter narratives, in the resurrection narratives? And my version of his answer was that because he is the present Word made flesh, we are then invited into the narrative and to experience that. So, I mean, Jesus does talk about the Old Testament in the walk to Emmaus, but he never specifically quotes it the way he does other places. But those are a couple of the, I think, the surprises along the way.
What would you say to that believer? Because we get a lot of people listening to this. And some are terrified to read the New Testament or just want to dismiss it because it can be confusing. What would you say to that type of person that's listening right now?
That's terrified to listen to read the Old Testament.
Yeah. Well, I understand. I mean, it's not easy slugging. It's fun reading Genesis, Exodus. You know, that's nice. But, you know, Numbers, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, these are not fun passages to read. So I understand that. And there is the whole tension about the violence in the Old Testament that has to be worked through pretty deeply, I think. I don't think we take easy answers one way or the other on that. But I would say to them, you know, it was good enough for Jesus. It's probably good enough for us. And you can follow Jesus and only read the Gospels, no question about it. Maybe that's a little bit like saying, well, I know that Abraham Lincoln was a president of the United States. Oh, but I never really read about slavery and the Civil War and what he went through. I mean, I think the deepening of our identity in the Old Testament. The one thing that I do push back against is, and I'm sure you've heard it too, people say, well, the God of the Old Testament is the God of law, and the God of the New Testament is the God of grace. And I'm saying, you've never read the Old Testament. All that love and grace, they're revealed, demonstrated. The only reason we have 10 commandments is because this God of grace liberated these people from Egypt. And the commandments open with that. I am the Lord, your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. That's love and grace. And I don't know exactly how you can be a Christian and never spend any time praying the Psalms, because that's where we find ourselves. That all of our emotions, all of our fears, all of our anger, all of our hatred, it's all there in the Psalms. Mm-hmm. And it's there in the context of prayer and praise, so that I can be honest in my own life of prayer and in my own faith. I don't need to hide my negative emotions or my fears or my anxieties. It's all right there in the book. So I would start with that.
I'm hearing a lot of your dual heart come through, Jim, both your heart that people would be able to find their bearings in the midst of crises, but also your heart that people would be able to read the Old Testament, perhaps even through this lens that Jesus shares it as he teaches, and open the door to something new there. I love that. If people are interested in reading more and getting a copy of this book, where's the best way for them to find it? I assume it's on Amazon and all the normal.
But... what isn't on Amazon?
I know, right?
All there. It's also, I'll make a plug. It's a Cokesbury, and I'll make a plug for the publishing house. It's a Cokesbury, and it's on a lot of, if you Google it, you'll find it.
And I know you've got a website as well. People can follow you on jimharnish.org. So that's another place if people want to find more about your work. So they can go there as well, I assume.
Sure, that's my blog, where I unburden myself.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Jim, thank you so much for joining us today. Friends, this has been Jim Harnish talking about his new book, Finding Your Bearings, How Words That Guided Jesus Through Crisis Can Guide Us. And I hope it's been a blessing to you, whatever you're going through today. And if it has, I pray you'll share it with someone else who may need it as well. And in the meantime, remember, we are better together. God bless.